Welcome back to the Broadway Block. On today's episode, gonna go over the tough loss against the Islanders last night. We got a great guest from Bleacher Report, Adam Herman. How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Thank you for penciling us in. We know you have a hockey league, and we're happy that we were able to get in here.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, one of those losses you want to kind of put in the rear view, man. I mean, that was like kind of classic Rangers hockey, right? Bad start, nice comeback, and no follow through. I'll be honest, it was plus 630 on the money line for a Rangers comeback.
You know, like what it looks like to me was, as you said, it looked like they got off to a really poor start, conceding way too many chances early, which is not a new problem. However, you know, number one, it has been a focal point this season that this is a team that has like both the talent and the tenacity to come back in games. And, it got close. The Islanders are a team that in theory, once it's 3-0, they can kind of just shut everything down. And that's not really what happened last night. They hit a few posts where you go, all right, this could have gone either way. You know, I thought they definitely generated chances. And of course, Islanders have got good goaltending. So definitely not a game, I think, probably a game in which, emotionally it feels worse given kind of the circumstances and the opponent than in the grand scheme it probably really means in terms of which direction this team is going. That's just kind of, it's kind of how it goes against a team that, it's not a contender certainly, but definitely a tough out and looks like they're headed to the playoffs.
Well, it's funny. Hank said it, and he mentioned it against after the game against the Penguins that like any of these teams that are trying to get these last few spots, they're coming ready to play, and it's hard for the Rangers, who know they're qualified and going to make the playoffs, to get up every night for these games. Another point is, it seems like we want to come back in these games, but for me, it's like I'd like to see the Rangers come out with a 1-0 lead and battle from the first period. And I think that's what all those doubters that are saying like, oh, the Rangers are frauds, they're not going to go anywhere in the playoffs. I think just that style of play is very dangerous to come back every game and have to make like this fantastic comeback. It's going to bite you in the butt no matter what at some point. And then the other thing is Igor playing the Islanders, he's 4-7-1 lifetime. And it doesn't matter if it's Varlamov or if it's Sorokin, he still seems to have like, for a while it was, oh, Sorokin has the best of Shesterkin when they play. But now it's like, it kind of just seems like the Islanders have it. So for me, those are the two worrisome points. And I said it right after the stadium series that I wouldn't want to play the Islanders round one.
Yeah, I think all that's fair. One thing that MSG broadcasts, and particularly Valley and Hank, do a good job of is kind of telling like the true like story from a player's perspective of what's going on and what players are feeling. And, kind of the cliches that are always leaned on, they kind of, will be like, here's the reality. And it's true, like the Islanders are playing for their lives right now, whereas the Rangers, could practically lose out and they're going to still get home ice advantage, right? And that's just the reality of it is you have teams that have different levels of worry and in response to that, different levels of desperation. Now that doesn't mean the Rangers can just skate around doing nothing, of course. For one, they still have things to play for, like matchups and such. And of course, you want to go into the playoffs, with your best foot forward. I do think it's accurate to say one team has more to play for in that moment, and to some extent, at least that reflected at least in the start, right? As to your second point about first round matchups, I agree. Like, I don't think I think the Islanders are the least desirable of the matchups. That's not to say the Rangers wouldn't be favorites regardless, but it's a matter of percentages. And you look at teams like Pittsburgh or Washington, and Detroit maybe even, it's like those teams are very reliant on their top few players, lacking a lot of depth, don't have really the special teams to match with the Rangers. And the Islanders, are, I think, a tougher out, if nothing else, because of that goaltending, number one. It hasn't been quite the same this season, but that is a team that when it is on its game can kind of shut things down. And as we saw last postseason for the Rangers, when the game kind of slows down and it's a lot of dump and chase and no one's really generating chances, the Rangers couldn't get anything going as the Devils, and it hit them in a bad way. I think the Islanders, though it really hasn't shown too much this season, and they've changed philosophies a bit under Patrick Waugh, that is the kind of team that in theory could frustrate the Rangers in that way, where they're maybe not getting many chances because of their commitment to defense and then the goaltending not allowing much. So certainly I agree. Like, if you're picking ideal playoff opponent for the Rangers in round one, I don't think the Islanders are the first choice.
I also feel like, not to talk crap because we obviously just lost to them last night, but you scale this to like 2 weeks ago when it was a potential that we play like the Bolts, let's say. It looked like maybe we play them round one. It's like, I could swallow that, you know, for sure. But losing to the Islanders round one after the season that we've had would be like the worst pill to swallow for sure. It looks like they're going to play the Hurricanes if the playoffs started right now. To your point about being a really low scoring, shut down, kind of dump and chase game, you're going to have two of those teams kind of going against each other that way, which I would love to get out of the way when we go into round two. When we talked about the Devils last season, I felt like the first few games were just so wide open that that's why it leaned into our style of play. Igor can bail you out on that breakaway and puck goes the other way. I trust the guys that we have there. And then when it got really slow and things kind of got difficult and they made the pivots that they did, it was blatantly clear that we didn't have a way to deal with it. So it's one of those situations where, like, on paper, this team is great, but game's not played on paper. And I think there's more emotion, not in the fact that it was a rivalry game, but it was to the team that we lost to that, as of a few weeks ago, wasn't in a playoff position. And that's much more difficult down the stretch when you're looking to take the momentum from these wins into that first round. And it's just like, kind of leaves questions where we should have really walked through our last five games. I mean, if you were going to be trying to make the playoffs, and you were going to set up a schedule for the Rangers to have for the last six games, we couldn't have had an easier run than the last few games to really cement a spot. So
yeah, and I don't expect anyone to watch that game or come away from that game feeling great about it. I think there are redeeming qualities to that game, and I think you can simulate the happenings of that game, you know, 100 times, and the Rangers maybe win that 45 times, 50, you know, 50 times. You know, a post one way or the other, and it's suddenly a different game. But, you know, regardless, you know, going back to that Devils series, and, you know, as you're saying, like, when it was going well and it was kind of a track meet, like, the Rangers looked great. And then once the Devils, you know, started shutting things down, the Rangers had no response. Now, you know, we can talk about certain roster ways in which the roster at the way it was constructed may have contributed to that. But the number one thing that I think is different this year is the coaching staff. You know, Gerard Gallant has his strengths as a coach. Certainly, you know, the Rangers went to the Eastern Conference final, you know, with him. You know, the issues with him had always been with adjusting. Number one, tactically, and number two, kind of recognizing early on when something's not working. Pete LaViolette, I think, is the total opposite in that regard. And then not to mention the coaching staff, it goes beyond him. It's Phil Housley and Dan Hughes, who are both really smart coaches. You know, Phil was a great defenseman, offensive defenseman and defensive defenseman for a long time, and had a good mind. And Dan Muse is one of the top young coaches in the league. He's going to be an NHL coach someday, head coach, I should say. But, you know, back to my point, like, this is a coaching staff that I think has 99 times out of 100 has hit the right notes in terms of, if the Rangers lost, but they played well, they seem to recognize that. And if they won in a way that they probably didn't deserve, they recognize that. And they're not quick to tinker with lines or things, you know, just because, you know, the sky's falling because of one loss or whatever. But at the same time, they haven't let things linger too long, right? They've changed the roster, you know, whether it's waving Bonino, you know, they seem to understand timing. I think, you know, if you guys agree that they seem to understand when it's time to change things, when it's time to stick with what's happening and just maybe tweak a thing or two. You know, that's the kind of game where I think that's a coaching staff that can look at that first period and be like, hey, like, here's where we lost our heads a little bit. Here's where we were running around a little bit. There were some uncharacteristic defensive lapses from a few players. I saw Jimmy Vesey on the, I believe, second Islanders goal uncharacteristically, you know, got beat by the defenseman, I think Dobson. And, you know, it happens. It's an 82 game season. I just keep coming back to, there's talent on the roster, and I think I trust this coaching staff.
I agree with you. I've seen LaViolette pivot on things And I like that he's an open faced book during these post game interviews. I don't want to say that, like, I know you've said you didn't watch the game, but you know, you got the gist of it, which with the Mika Zibanejad coming off for a line change. And then I personally thought that he ran into Adam Pellick. I didn't think it was malicious. Maybe we all know from, you know, school days of somebody you don't like walking by and you kind of throw out a little bit of a bow. Yeah, does it count as a hit? I wouldn't say it does, but, you know, it's a rivalry game. The other hit that I did think that was the Dobson hit on Vincent Trocheck when the Rangers were down in the zone with about a minute and a half left in the game. That I thought should have been called a penalty. But that's where I like LaViolette, to bring it back to your point. I think he kind of said that thing in the post game as a vicious hit to kind of fire the boys up. Like, hey, we got a game against them Saturday. Like,
not quite in the Tortorella theatrics, but in the same vein of like, no, this is an issue and we're going to talk about it. And the boys better be fired up about it. I think there's going to definitely be a response for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, something that comes up, you know, when I talk to people behind the scenes once in a while, just in the general in hockey world, not necessarily the Rangers or anything, but people seem to think the coach's job in post-game conferences and press conferences and after practice, they think the coach's job is to tell the truth, and it's not, right? Like, their job is to say what they think they need to say for specific purposes. And, like, look, to some degree, coaches owe the fans, because fans are paying customers, and the purpose of these press conferences is for that, is publicity and give, you know, so it would drive me nuts sometimes with either Gallant or Alain Vigneault, where they would just say, they'd say nothing. Right. They say absolutely nothing. They're just the same three canned answers about, like, oh, like, I just made this decision because I thought it was best for the team. Right. That's one thing. I'm not talking about that. It doesn't matter whether LaViolette thinks Pellick meant it or not. Right. Like, that's not the point in what he's doing there. But yeah, like, he's protecting his team. He's advocating for his team. You know, picture if you're a player on the bench, right, and you're pissed off about it, and like, look, you can't prove Pellick meant it, but you just think so because you were in a similar situation once, and that's your inclination, right? And then you hear your head coach say, nah, you're wrong, right? Like, that's just going to be very deflating. And so, like, you can't go too far the other way, right? They can't start running around and, one, throwing stupid hits that create penalties in the next game, and, two, like, abandoning their assignments and, you know, in positioning and the neutral zone forecheck, so just to try to get payback. Right. So you don't want it to go too far in the other direction. LaViolette's an experienced head coach. I'm sure he's going to hit, like I keep saying, he's going to hit the right note here. He's going to find the balance. But yeah, like, they all say the same thing, all the coaches, right? Like, even if it's the worst after the Rempe hit on Siegenthaler, right, which was just so obviously bad, right? And he says, oh, like, I need to look at the tape, I couldn't see it in real time. Like, like, he's saying what he needs to say. His job is to represent the team, and, you know, but more within that, like, to hit the right notes with the locker room.
Sorry to cut you off, yeah. But your point with the, like, changing and knowing who to plug in, I just want to make the comparison that I feel like Gerard Gallant, with this whole Rempe thing, he would have just kept playing him till that ship sailed and Rempe was suspended. Drop down to the minors. Like, I feel like LaViolette's like, I know I have this card, and it's like kind of like in Uno, like, I know I could drop this on the deck and fuck you if I want to, basically.
Yeah, I mean, suffice to say, I won't be surprised if Rempe's in that next game against the Islanders, you know, for better or worse, for the reasons you just described, right? And I won't get too much into, you know, the whole Rempe thing, but it's clear in the way LaViolette is using, right? Like, he starts changing what the fourth line looks like when it's 10 minutes up to the third period. You know, Rempe wasn't seeing certain shifts then, and he wasn't seeing certain shifts from defensive zone assignments. And, like, several times LaViolette wanted to make that line a shutdown line to go up against the other team's top forward line. Definitely, I'm going to take a pretty good guess that Rempe will be in the lineup against the Islanders next time around, and that LaViolette will have a very specific curated message for him on, you know, why he's there, but yet, you know, we have 2 points that we're trying to get, right? And, like, and also, we don't want our players getting hurt either, mm-hmm. right? So again, this is a very experienced coach who's, you know, seen it all for over many years. I don't doubt he wants to get his team pumped up for the next matchup, you know, but also, look, this is a veteran locker room. I don't necessarily think they need to be told either. I think they're going to be unhappy with how that first period unfolded. And then you add in, you know, questionable hits. They're going to be ready. Plus, you know, as we've been talking about, potential first round matchup, like they're going to want to be ready.
Yeah. And listen, and just to make things clear for anybody listening, like I am in no way advocating that I want Rempe to come out there and be a bull in a china shop and fight everybody that moves. Quite the opposite. I mean, I remember when we brought on Ryan Reeves that a lot of people were quick to point out that it's not that he has to fight. And that's the whole point, is that it's basically an extra officiator for us in that aspect. And you're going to be hard pressed to find somebody fucking around and trying to find out when Matt Rempe's on the ice. And I think that what would be a really good message to send is just like you said, he's probably going to have a very specific marching orders for that game. And I would like to see him play the whole game, even though, you know, maybe 7 minutes of it, right? But I would like to see him not get ejected from it. And these officials know who he is. They know the circumstances and they know exactly what's going to happen. If something should occur similar to the Devils game where the coaches are quick to put out both fourth lines, I think everyone who watched that clip of the line brawl watched the officiator come right over to Rempe and Curtis McDermott before the faceoff and said, hey, listen, you know, no one heard the hot mic, but something of the effect of, if you guys go, I'm kicking you out of here. So, you know, I don't expect that to happen. I do expect, you know, Artemi Panarin and Vincent Trocheck to be on the ice for that first faceoff, but I mean, we'll see. I mean, we have home ice, so, you know, opposing team's going to put out the first lineup and we're going to see what happens. But
I mean, look, the ultimate payback the Rangers could give is winning the game, right? And decreasing the Islanders' odds of making the playoffs, right? And then also for the Rangers' own purposes, like they could use the points for, you know, you're trying to finish top in the conference, top in the league, you know, and you don't want to lose sight of that, right? Like these, there are subplots within any game. Like we like hockey for the stories, like we like the narratives, but, you know, at the same time, you don't want the team to lose sight of, you know, at the end of the day, this, they're trying to win a Stanley Cup here, you know? And that's gotta be kind of the priority.
Before we let you go, Adam, I got to ask you. So yesterday, I'm going to blame this loss on me because I went to my Rangers t-shirt drawer and I was like, okay, navy blue. I don't know if you've seen the Rangers Town shirt. Anytime I wear it, we get a loss. But I was like, new season, haven't worn it all year. I was like, I'm going to put on the Rangers Town shirt. Boom, put it on. I knew the loss was coming. Do you do anything superstitious or have anything like that when you're watching the game? That like, I don't touch that.
No, listen. So the first seasons I really remember as a Ranger fan in which, you know, like I really, really kind of knew what was going on. You're looking at like, you know, I remember Gretzky's last game, you know, so then you're looking around that time period and for what, 4 or 5 seasons, no matter what the team did, it was miserable to watch. Right. And I think kind of what I learned along the way was there was nothing I was going to do. I was going to change that, right? The cards are going to fall how they're going to fall. I think, you know, it's fun if people, you know, it's fun. Like I said before, like we watch hockey, sports, it's for the narratives. It's for the stories, right? It's storytelling. I think it's great when fans have.
I'm going to send you that shirt. You can wear that shirt.
Yeah. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe it's that you're wearing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? No, I love it when fans have things, right? Because like that's the point. It's not just about, all right, watching the game and whatever. Like it's about, you know, feeling part of it, and it's about, you know, having fun with it. I can't say I have any rituals or anything like that. And I'm actually, I think a lot of people think I'm a pretty boring person to watch hockey with because I'm the complete opposite of the person who's like losing their mind every second and screaming and yelling. I'm like, let me watch just very like carefully so I can analyze what I think I see is happening and all of that and internalize. And then like, I'll be like, oh, like, remember 4 minutes left in the second period, like this, you know, this play by, you know, Fox or whatever it is. You know, I think we all express like our fanhood in different ways, and like, you know, whether it's the rituals like that, or, you know, for me, it's, if you looked at my notes and like my laptop, you'd be like, this guy is manic. This guy is out of his mind, like with all these notes everywhere and whatever. So I think if there's any kind of ritual in that way, it's definitely that.
I guess along the lines of superstition, man, is that to say that you would be all about us winning the President's Trophy?
Yeah, look, like, first of all, I don't believe in curses, and I think Rangers fans have good reason to, you know, if believe in curses, believe they can be broken. But beyond that, better teams tend to win. And if you win the President's Trophy, you're likely a better team. Doesn't guarantee anything, you know, but like the last thing I'll say is, and again, as Rangers fans should know, there are 32 teams, right? Only one can win the Stanley Cup. You know, and if you average that out where every team does equally well, that means you're going to see one cup win every 32 years, right? You gotta learn to enjoy the process, I think, because you're probably not going to win the Stanley Cup. And that's not just a Rangers thing. Look at any team. You ask me, give any team, they're probably not winning the Stanley Cup this year. It doesn't matter if you pick Boston or Florida or Edmonton. That's just the reality of it. It's really, really hard. And if you're going to put all of your weight behind, you know, if they don't win the Stanley Cup, it was a waste of time. I don't think that's healthy for fanhood. And I think Rangers fans, if the Rangers win the President's Trophy, I think they should celebrate that. And I think if and when that happens, the Rangers raise a banner, you know, next season for that or whatever. It's not the ultimate goal, but like I think there's a lot of pride in that. I think there's a lot of enjoyment in that. It reflects a journey that's begun since training camp in September, 82 games, right? Battling through a whole lot of injuries to many players, many star players, dealing with adversity. And if you overcome that to become the top team in the league at 32, like, I think that's something to celebrate.
Well, thanks again for being so generous with your time, brother. We'd really appreciate it. And love to chat hockey with you anytime, man.
Yeah, happy to do it.
Appreciate you, brother. Be well.
Let's go Rangers.
Yeah, let's go Rangers.